Welcome to Lost River Legends. Our motto, Ex Tenebris, is Latin for out of the shadows. We attempt to understand the complex world around us and bring light to subjects hidden in darkness. We explore paranormal topics with guests from all around the world. Now welcome your Lost River Legends hosts, James and Brett. We hope you enjoy the show.
Side of the road, sun is going down, crows get to squawking and doing their thing, which is crows talking to each other. You know something going down because they see something. And next thing you know, we hear freaking, like, it to me it sounds like, you know, a football team running through the woods directly at you, but it's not like ducking under limbs and branches. It's like intentionally running through stuff. And I see this gigantic black mass, and I was at like 10 and a half feet in the air, moving from one tree to the next. Like, it saw the light coming, and it was darting behind to get to another tree. And it confirmed that whatever the hell ran down on us was there, but I could feel it. And the described feeling, you know how it's beyond the sense of that creepy somebody's watching me. It was like the atoms inside of my body. At a cellular level, my body was telling me, man, you are in danger.
Hey everybody, welcome to Lost River Legends. Welcome to the latest episode. We are glad that you're here tonight, and we hope you enjoy the show. Tonight we're going to be visiting with Dark Waters, also known as DW. And DW was gracious enough to come on the show and share with us his werewolf or dogman encounter and talk about the subject. It's a very strange subject and a very frightening subject, to say the least. And we hope you enjoy the show. We had a great time talking with DW. He has a lot of great content on his YouTube channel, and we're grateful for him and for his opportunity to come on the show and to share his knowledge with us, and we hope you enjoy the show. Dark Waters, welcome to Lost River Legends. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you gentlemen doing this fine day?
We're doing great. We have a warm, sunny day outside, and it's not windy. You know, we're here in Idaho, and we've had a lot of wind this spring. And so the days that we don't have wind, it makes it really nice to be outside.
Nope, I'm excited to be here with you in the audience. But to the listeners, you guys have to forgive the birds, because when I start talking paranormal stuff here at this location, the birds start chirping. And then it turns into crows. You'll notice probably like in the next 30 minutes, the crows will start squawking as we get further and further down the rabbit hole. Just know that that's a part of the whole thing. It's really bad at night when I do like interviews at night. Birds just start chirping out of nowhere. And people who interview me, they're like freaking out, like, why are the birds making that noise? And I'm like, dude, it's all in the business. It's all in the business.
Interesting.
It's a pattern you've recognized, though.
Well,
it's definitely.
Yeah, so we reached out to you because we've covered a lot of topics in our first season, and in our second season we've covered several new topics that we haven't ever discussed before, and we wanted to reach out to you specifically about what people call dogmen. I don't necessarily like that term. I mean, I think it's kind of synonymous with werewolves. But what's your take on dogmen? I mean, we see a lot of a chatter on the internet. There's a lot of information, a lot of reports and encounters coming out. What's your take on the whole dogman phenomenon?
So there's a couple of ways you can look at the whole dogman thing. One of the ways that you can look at it is, from an internet perspective, it's a monetizable cryptid. So you're going to have a lot of stories about it. These birds are going to make me go inside because they're going crazy. It's an easily monetizable cryptid. People have a fascination with werewolves, right? So you're going to see a plethora of dogman and werewolf encounters because on the internet, it's something that people really like to listen to. But when you really dig deep and you get down into the subject and a topic and you like kind of like start breaking the surface, get 10 feet on the ground, 20 feet on the ground. And finally, when you get to the core, you realize that not only is it real, but there's like a 3-lane highway from where these things come from. You got the original, what I like to call old world dogmen and cryptids that are a part of, from a Christian perspective, the original genetic manipulation from falling angels. And then in the center lane, you have these demonic manifestations of werewolves and dogmen. Those things are known to be done either if you're a person who's really into the paranormal and you have some kind of demonic attachment, then that attachment manifests itself in the form of something that would frighten you, or very powerful witches are known to summon things like dog man and goat man and things of that nature, right?
Yeah.
And then the other lane, which is the most frightening one, is the fact that there's genetic modification that's been going on for the past 100 years, and that these things are genetically modified animals and creatures. So all three lanes exist. All three lanes are real. All three different lanes have encounters where people experience seeing all three of those forms of creatures in those lanes. And the encounters are drastically different based on kind of the origins, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there's a story I'm about to release today. This lady who lives in Violet, Louisiana, a friend of mine hooked us up about 2 weeks ago, and she has her husband's diary that I'm trying to buy, who he took copious notes about his dogman encounters over the past 5 years, right?
Wow.
He experienced what I believe were some of the original dogmen. Like, and those original beings are not particularly aggressive. They will defend themselves. They're like a family unit. They're very curious. They want to see what you're doing. They're kind of like Bigfoot in a way, except for, you know, if you walk up on a Bigfoot, for the most part, they're going to go in the other direction. These things are going to hold their ground, right? And okay. Then, and those are experiences that happened in like 2009, 2010. Around 2015, that family unit moved away from the area of their property, and he just saw this solo male dog man. It was way bigger. It was way more aggressive. And his description was, it loved to terrorize him. And my belief, and I stand on this, is that that particular type of entity, that particular flesh and blood entity, we ain't talking about like a demonic manifestation, that particular entity is one of the genetically modified ones that are walking around that somehow escaped or somebody let loose. I can't tell which way that happened, but that particular entity is one of those. And they tend to be extremely aggressive. It just almost, you know, like a maniac stalking you in the woods.
So you're talking about them being very physical, and even if it's demonic, it's still physical in how they're interacting with people.
Right. So to answer the question, is it physical or is it kind of like a mental thing? Even the demonic encounters are physical manifestation. So how do we know it's physical? Because the person can smell, they can hear. And in cases where, for example, one lady called me about an encounter she had where she was in a bed sleep, woke up, and there was a gigantic freaking wolf standing on two legs in her bedroom. She's wide awake. She wakes her husband. And when her husband wakes up, it starts to fade away. But as he was waking up, it was putting pressure on the edge of the bed, like on the foot of the bed, like the corner of the bed. And they still were left with that indention in their bed on the mattress, where it was literally about to stepping onto their bed. But it was demonic, and it disappeared. And they're not in the country. They're freaking in condos in Houston. You see what I'm saying? So,
wow. Yeah.
People have physical manifestations of these things. But when you start talking about the guys who are in the woods and the swamps and some semi-rural areas, they have encounters that are just terrifying. So what I tell people, you know, Dogman 101 again, the basic thing you need to know is assume it's real. Even though it may sound like it's crazy, it may sound far-fetched, but if you're a person who lives in a rural area or a semi-rural area, or if you're a person who lives anywhere near a national forest, or you have a national forest that butts up against your property and you start experiencing crazy and weird things, go ahead and assume that what you're experiencing is real, because you're safer with that assumption than you would ever be assuming that you're kind of like making it up or you're seeing things, because you won't make the right decisions and you'll take it lightly when you should not take the situation lightly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one thing that I can tell people. The number two thing I would say is avoid shooting at these creatures at all costs. You know what I'm saying? Unless it's something's breaking in your window, you know, trying to come through your door, then, you know, you let loose. But outside of that, just, you know, back out of the situation, get away from them, let them go about their business, unless you're left with no choice. But if you're left with no choice, then, you know, you don't stop shooting until you run out of bullets. You know what I'm saying? Then
sure.
Get some more bullets and keep shooting. But don't put yourself in a situation where you encounter these things. Now, unfortunately, most people end up in a situation where they're encountering Dogman and even Bigfoot unknowingly, and then they're surprised. But there's other people who go out looking for these things, and they find what they're looking for. Then they freak out because they really don't believe. And the biggest problem is a problem of belief, because some people need proof. They're kind of like my boy Tony. Tony wants to go see stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That will get you hurt when it comes to this cryptid. It really will. So I'll tell you guys about one of the things I recently did. So I started a little camera project where we were trying to capture evidence of Dogman, right? There's a place on the outskirts of New Orleans where I'm at, Bayou Sauvage, where for sure there have been about 50 Dogman encounters. Like, literally. They've seen them in helicopters. They've seen them on four-wheelers. They have seen them from boats. I know it's a location, so I go out there and put a camera, right? Put the camera. We don't get no activity. Talk to one of my friends who's a veterinarian. I'm like, look, if I want to get these creatures to come into the area, what do I do? Says, okay, go out there and urinate on the camera and then go back and check on it. No problem.
Now, are you talking
keep in mind,
like a trail cam?
No, this is a 4G wireless camera where you can tap into it live, right?
Okay.
You can literally watch the app on your phone live,
okay,
right?
So this
you can,
is
at any point
end.
In time, you can turn that camera on your app, and it streams live to you.
Okay.
Not a trail camera. It's like live streaming video.
Wow.
So I go back out there. Keep in mind, you got to walk about 3-4 miles to this location. Let's see. Maybe 2.5. It's a 5-mile walk out there and back, right? So I walk back out there, urinate on a camera. Nope, I'm lying to you. I drove out there that time because I was able to get past the barriers. I drive out there, urinate on a camera, make sure it's kind of settled in, pack the dirt around it, and there's this spray foam. The camera's mounted to like a 2x4, which is in the ground. I dug a hole, put the spray foam in that hole, and then I took these braces, drove them into the ground, and then zip-tied the camera to the pole with the braces dropped in the ground and the styrofoam. So the camera's in the ground, right? And for a while, you know, we still didn't see anything on the camera. Well, one evening, the guy who's the only person that lives back there in Bayou Sauvage calls me. And he says, James, he's like, something's going on out here because I hear a lot of howling and it sounds like women screaming. And he was like, did you do anything? I'm like, well, I can't. I went out there and I urinated on the camera. He was like, why would you do that? I was like, because I wanted to get some activity. He was like, well, you don't live out here. That's not a good idea. He was like, I'm going to call you back. Well, that very next morning, like we talked that evening, that morning at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, that camera was yanked out of the ground and drug off. You could see the footage of the camera being drugged, and then you see the camera kind of splash into water. So, unfortunately, that wasn't on auto record, and it didn't auto record it, but it was yanked, it was drugged, and then you saw it splash into the water. So I called him back, and I said, hey, man, do you mind going check on my camera? He's like, sure, I'll go. I said, well, I'll try and meet you out there. But he beats me to the spot, and you can see the where the camera was ripped out of the ground. You can see where it was drugged through the grass. It kind of snakes through the grass, and then you can see where it's plopped into the water. And the styrofoam part that was in the ground was floating upwards, but the rest of the camera was in the water.
Okay.
So now he and I are out there talking, and he's like, bro, you can't do that. He's like, you know, because it pisses them off. This is their territory. And he literally has an area that he does not go to. So he has, there's these kind of yellow bars on the levee out there. The bars are put there, kind of imagine like vertical poles that are jammed into the ground, right? They're designed to keep people from riding on the levee and going back up to that area. Well, he lives back there. And if you look it up, you can look it up on a camera. I mean, on a Google Earth, look up New Orleans East Little Woods neighborhood. And then you will look on the backside of the Little Woods neighborhood. There's a big turn. It's called Haynes Boulevard. If you're in that turn on Haynes Boulevard from Google Maps, you'll see the levee. And then you'll see houses, one house, literally one house on the water. That's this guy's house. And so he won't go past the second set of yellow poles for nothing. There's two sets. He will not go past that second set under any circumstances. He went past that second set because I asked him to, and then because I went out there with him. But other than that, he doesn't go because he says, man, you know, there's things back there that need to be respected. During that same conversation with him while we're out there, he starts to break down the area. Things about, you know, the area that I had heard of, but I didn't really, you know, understand. Like, that whole area was Native American land. But, you know, in New Orleans, there's this, you have the Mardi Gras Indians, which are like black Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that area was the Native American Indians. But back in those days, back in the day, they used to pretty much intermingle with black people in the area. So that's how you got the black Indians, the very, very dark skinned black Indians. He started to show me the burial mounds that were back there. And you can see on the terrain, it looks flat. And then there's this huge mounds with trees that are growing at the top of them. And he was like, look, these are all burial mounds. He's like, these are all Native American burial mounds. And he's like, that's why you have all these various creatures back here. And I was like, well, what the hell else is back here? And he starts telling me all kinds of crazy stuff that he's seen. And we really get into dog, man. He's like, no, that's definitely back here. He said, I've seen that before. I've seen it on my porch before. So I say all that to say this. There's a couple of things that you can, if you find yourself on Native American land, right? Indian land. I don't know. People got to be so politically correct today. I'm going to call it Indian land. And you find yourself next to a gigantic burial mound, and then you find yourself near water or any other natural resource, food source. And that's what people don't understand. They need a food source. Then you probably are in dog man territory. Okay. 9 times out of 10, you're in dog man territory. Either it's a territory they visit and protect, or it's something that they're stationary and they're there. Mostly, they migrate back and forth through areas, and those are kind of their rest stop areas.
All right. Well, that's some good information. One of the things I'd like to back up just a little bit, you talked about genetically engineered. How long has this been going on for? And is it
well, we know,
here in the United States only? Is this a worldwide thing?
Well, we know that genetic engineering worldwide has been going on for the past 100 years. But it's right in front of our faces. It's just that We as human beings are busy with other things. So let's just walk down a road and kind of think logically. So in the 1930s or the 1940s, in Russia, they did an experiment where there was, they called, it was chimpanzee man, right? Half chimpanzee, half human. It had the face of a human, the body of a chimpanzee. The freaking Russian scientists got so afraid they killed it, right? That was in the 30s or 40s. You can look it up. I could be wrong, but it was significant amount of time ago to where we know that the technology has advanced to the point to where they can pretty much do whatever they want, right? So let's just say, I know this is wrong, but let's say 1950s. I know it was before the 1950s, but let's just say 1950s. So in the 1950s, they were able to successfully make half man, half chimpanzee, right? Same thing off of, you know, Planet of the Apes, all right? Skipping forward, we have GMO food, GMO strawberries. We have tomatoes that are purple that can cure cancer. We have GMO mosquitoes. We have pretty much everything. We have glowing cats that are immune to diseases. All these things are documented that you can look up right now as I'm speaking and find.
Yeah, and they have the glowing pigs too.
Glowing fish. Those are the things that we know about, right? And what I've come to discover is that the things that we know about are always far behind the things that we don't know about. Right. One evening, one of my witnesses calls me and he says, man, I've been getting contacts from this guy who claims he knows where Dog Man came from. I'm like, okay, let's get him on the phone. He's like, I can't get him on the phone. I'm like, okay, well, give me his email address. Let me email him. He's like, look, I'm going to do a chat with him because that's what we've been doing. I'm going to share my screen with you. So he shares his screen and he's chatting with the guy and they go back and forth. And the guy says, go look into the hurricane. I can't remember the name of the hurricane. It was the one that completely wiped out South Florida. I mean, it was maybe in the late 90s. I mean, it completely wiped out Florida. I mean, it was a terrible hurricane. And look into the laboratory that was located there in the escaped animals. And I'm like, yeah, I remember they talked about that's how the pythons got into the Everglades, because there was a laboratory that had pythons and all kind of exotic animals, and they escaped into the swamps. And he's like, well, I worked at that laboratory. This is where your dog men come from and a whole bunch of other cryptids in Florida.
Wow.
So we start trying to do the research. And you cannot find it. All you found was news articles that talked about kind of escaped, endangered species of animals that escaped into the Everglades, right? And so, because I can guarantee you that the real information that we're looking for is classified, you have to understand how to read the information that you have and look at things from a 30,000 foot view, all right? So just recently, the U.S. Senate, voted down a bill that would prohibit the creation of human-animal chimeras, right? You can look it up. It was just yesterday. I think yesterday they voted it down. And I talked about it on YouTube, but people didn't quite understand it. So for a minute, everybody, imagine we're 30,000 feet in the air looking down on a city, right? And we just want to be above the problem to see the solution, right? So on our left-hand side, we have the information that we know for a fact that they've been genetically modifying animals since before the 1950s, right? We've seen the genetic modification of our food, our mosquitoes, our plants, our fish, our cats, our pigs. Everybody's heard about the spider goat whose milk is used to make body armor. All these things have come out, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we're 30,000 feet in the air. We're not thinking about it from our just individual perspective. All right, with 30,000 feet in the air. Now, all of a sudden, they are trying to pass a bill to stop genetic modification, but they're saying in the embryo phase. So what that tells me is this. You guys have been doing this for a very long time, and you've done something now that scares you, and you want to put a stop to it. Because somebody somewhere done went way too far. And now it's like, hold on, man. You know, we let y'all do this. Well, y'all gone way too far. We got to put it into it. So now they're trying to put it into it. What was significant about what happened yesterday was they voted the bill, the amendment. It wasn't a bill. They voted the amendment down and struck it out of the legislation, meaning, no, we're going to keep doing whatever this crazy, weird, strange freaky thing that's scaring you guys, we're going to keep doing it. So when you look at it from 30,000 feet in the air, you know for a fact there has to be not only genetically modified wolves, and which would equal dog men, but all kinds of freaky, crazy things that are somewhere in somebody's lab. Now, we do know that the Chinese government itself doesn't have the same strong regulations as the American government. And we do know that what happens is our nonprofits, I shouldn't say that, but I mean, whatever. We know for a fact that our federal government funds money into nonprofits who do that do research in other countries because they can't do the research here. That was one of the most significant things that just came out this week about the whole coronavirus coming from the Wuhan lab. Remember when coronavirus first came out, they were saying it was from a lab. It was like, nah, it didn't come from a lab. It came from people eating bats and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that don't make no sense. Now the news is pivoting back and saying, oh, well, maybe it came from a lab.
Mm-hmm.
The next pivot's got to be, well, how did they get the funding and blah, blah, blah. We know that money came from the American government, some of them the nonprofits. Those nonprofits did deals in China. So we know that this world pandemic started with our tax dollars, and it was developed in China. Can you imagine what else has been developed in China, a communist nation that has no rules and regulations? You know what I'm saying? So we in the paranormal community have to be thinkers, because we're entering a phase where, truthfully, the normies, because I don't care what anybody says, if you believe in Dogman, Bigfoot, werewolves, aliens, you are not a normie. You know what I'm saying? Your brain is open to the possibility of anything. So now the normies are being yanked into the paranormal world. They're literally being, you know, tied up with ropes around their feet and drug into our environment where they're going to have to face some of the tough things. And for us, we have to be smart enough to look at the situations and say, okay, these are the clues we've been left. This is the information that's there, and find the validation that we need, because you're not going to get the full disclosure. You're going to get bits and pieces of the puzzle, kind of like how recently, you know, there's been all these UFO sightings, you know what I'm saying? Where they're showing you pyramid-shaped UFOs flying through the sky.
Right.
For years, people have been saying they saw triangle UFOs and pyramid UFOs, right? Oh, all of a sudden now it's on the news.
Well, and
what scares me.
You got the UFO disclosure that's supposed to be happening, what is it, next month? That was written into one of the COVID relief bills. And we're seeing a lot more Navy footage and eyewitnesses coming out. And so, yeah, this is priming the pump for the average citizen that might not really care about it. But I agree with what you're saying.
Right. So I say all of that from a 30,000 foot perspective to say, to answer your question about are they genetically modified and what kind of proof do we have that they are genetically modified? It's all there. And somebody may say, well, you know, that's a conjecture, or you're making leaps. Well, I'm not making a leap to anything, because we know they're already made half man, half chimpanzee. So how far of a stretch is it to say, okay, we made half man, half wolf, half man, half elephant? You know what I'm saying? Like, what kind of person does that in the first place? But can you imagine, you know, the limits or the possibilities that particular person or that group of people, what kind of limits would they put on themselves? I don't think they have any limits as to what they would genetically modify. If you're going to take a chimpanzee and make it half man, half human. So that's to address the genetically modified question.
Right.
Sorry, I have to go. Took you guys all the way around the corner.
No, that's great information, and I'm glad that you brought it up. You seem to have a strong pulse on what's going on, especially with what happened yesterday with that legislation. So what are some, you know, we've brought up that we've had some demonic encounters. We've brought up that there's definitely some physical encounters based off of some genetically modified activities that are going on. Let's talk about some encounters. Like you hear a lot of encounters because you're kind of in that world right now. And we've actually, you know, we live in southern Idaho, and maybe a mile from where we're sitting right now, there was a dogman encounter in a cemetery of all places. That this girl was visiting a cemetery at night, and witnessed a dog man. And so you don't have to be in a forest. You're seeing stuff in a city. And like that earlier account that you mentioned, there's this couple that had one in their bedroom, and then it just kind of phased out and disappeared. And so there's some really odd happenings, and we see, we hear a lot of different accounts, but what are some current accounts that you maybe have access to that you'd be willing to share?
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest kind of door-busting dogman encounter lately has been the activity in Fort Pierce, Florida. So if you go take a look at my YouTube channel, you'll find a video that says, "Elusive Dog Man Captured on Video," right? That's this guy, Blue, in Fort Pierce, Florida. He did a little Facebook live stream talking to his neighbors and friends, opens his back door, and he literally records the dog man running across the screen under a light pole. You literally see it running right there on camera, right? Blue and I have spoken. We put a camera on the backside of his house. It's still there. It should still be running and recording. But the Fort Pierce area in particular is extremely interesting, because not only did he capture that video, he captured pictures where you can clearly see this wolf standing there. You can see the ears, you can see the face, you can see the shoulders, which are like huge trapezoid muscles. I mean, these biggest traps I've ever seen, standing there looking at him. But then in that surrounding area, that same neighborhood, the following week, there was another guy who was walking along this kind of wooded area where he saw that dog man, where Blue saw the dog man. It's like 11 o'clock at night. He's walking out there. That area is a shortcut that gets him around to this convenience store. And he sees something squatting down on a rock. It jumps down off the rock, stands up, and he described it as being like 9.5 to 10 feet tall, eyes glistening in grayish yellow from the streetlight. And it stands there and it watches him. He's about 40 yards away from it. And once he realizes it's not normal, he takes off running, right? Next person in the same neighborhood, this guy is in his house watching TV, chilling on a sofa. And he gets this feeling that something's watching him, like, you know, someone's looking at him. But he's had a lot of paranormal experiences. His mother was into Santeria. And so he knows that, you know, if you feel like something's watching you, it's either a spirit or it's a person. Mm-hmm. So he gets up and starts searching his house, making sure there's nobody there. And as his nerves start to subside and he gets comfortable, he's moving from his bedroom through the living room to the kitchen. And as he's walking into the kitchen, he notices what looks like a giant eyeball, like in the window of his front door. Like, you know, have the doors and they have that little window where you put the curtain over it.
Yeah.
Well, he's in a hood. He's got the door with the window, but he's got that screen, metal screen door in front mm-hmm. of it as well. So he notices that red eye shine as he's walking into the kitchen, kind of steps back, leans and looks back at the door again, and he sees the red eye. He sees it close, and then he sees it dart off, going away from the door. Braves musters up the courage to go open the front door, knowing that he doesn't have to open the screen door, opens the door, looks out, doesn't see anything. Thinking, he says, "Well, look, I'm just going to leave the door open. That way I can hear if somebody's out there and I don't know what to do." Goes back into the kitchen, pops a bag of popcorn. His neighbor comes over frantically beating on the door and tells him, "Hey, man, come outside. Come look at this." Well, when he opens that metal screen door, like the security door, not like the one with the little, you know, the little window screen that you would have on your bedroom window. We're talking about like the in the hood metal door to keep somebody from breaking in your house. When mm-hmm. they open that door, when he opens that door and they look, they see this dog man walking into the woods. It looks over his shoulders, same red eye shine glistening at both of them, and then walks into the woods. Now, the neighbor tells him, "Man, I was in my car fumbling around with my radio, and I saw that thing walk out of the woods, walk up to your door, look through your door, stand there, turn around, walk, look through your neighbor's door, and then walk back into the woods."
Wow.
So Fort Pierce is a very, very interesting area when it comes to dogman encounters, because people are seeing this over and over and over again. And the more witnesses I've spoken to in that area, the encounters are always the same. It's not really a threatening, "I'm going to get you, I'm going to growl at you." it's like it's showing itself to them. One person said that it showed its teeth. You know what I'm saying? Like it, but it didn't growl. It just showed the teeth. And it's interesting because there's cultural differences in community. So Fort Pierce is a heavy, heavy, heavy black community. And that community is very, like, a tough nut to crack as far as people sharing their encounters, because everyone there feels like the more it's talked about, the more this thing is going to come back.
Okay.
So as I talk to the witnesses there, it's harder to get them to tell their encounters. It's multiple people that have had encounters. We're talking about like 40 people, but I've only been able to get a handful of really talk. But you'll talk to one and he'll say, yeah, well, my cousin saw it, and my cousin and this chick and that person, they all saw it together. But all those people won't talk about it because their thing is, look, that's the devil. I'm not going to talk about it. It's evil. We're just going to leave it alone.
Yeah,
so there's these cultural differences that you got to kind of get past when you deal with witnesses. So Fort Pierce is the hottest spot right now when it comes to dogman activity. And in that case, there was, what do you call them? Forest, not forest rangers.
Like
the parks and recreation people that go out, and they went to the same area to go look for this creature. Like they literally went there looking because they had footage. They had the video footage, which has been all on TV. So when they went out and looked to inspect it and see what it was, they told the witness that it wasn't a wolf. They said it wasn't a man. They said it was some kind of unknown hominid creature. So they know what's going on in that area. Fish and Wildlife, that's the name I'm looking for, Fish and Wildlife. When the Fish and Wildlife went out there, they said it was some kind of unknown hominid creature. They don't know what it is, but just leave it the hell alone.
I wanted to interject here real quick about, so you mentioned that this guy had, you know, his mother was into Santeria. It's interesting because I'm thinking about what attracted that, you know, that entity or that being to his house. You know, was it the fact that's going on there? That's just like a very interesting connection. It might be ancillary, but I'm not sure.
Well, if it was a one-off, I would say it had something to do with the practice of magic or him having magic in his blood, but it's not a one-off. We're talking about multiple witnesses that have seen this thing, and you know, so it's not a one-off. As far as it coming to his particular house, I think it's looking for something or someone in that area. I just don't know why, because not only did it look, according to his neighbor, not only did it look in his front door, but it looked in his neighbor's front door as well. So he just so happened to be in there on the sofa watching TV, and he doesn't have one of those curtains over his that little window in his door. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's directly attributed to that particular magic. I would say that this area, for some reason, they are in this area and they're either looking for someone or they're looking for something. Now, to answer your question, to kind of get deeper into your question, as is it a possibility that they are associated with people who practice magic? Definitely, I've talked to people who dabble in magic. And those people who dabble in magic have seen a lot of crazy things, including dogmen. So there's a possibility that, no, that's not even the right word. There's a direct correlation between people who are seers and workers of magic, and then them having the ability and the encounters with all kinds of cryptids. So there's a direct correlation to that. However, in this particular case, I wouldn't be able to make that correlation because the activity has been strong in that area just in general. So it's kind of, it's too many encounters to directly attribute it to that.
Cool. That makes sense to me from that angle. Now kind of getting into those, I kind of want to poke at that a little bit more when you talk about how there is an association with people that are doing magic and that is it something that, you know, what kind of role does it play? Is it something that's like becomes a protector to them, or is there, what's the intent behind what they're doing?
I'll see if I can run through this real quickly. So we all are, as individuals, God gave us whether people believe in God or not, they're Christian or not, God, the creator, gave us souls. And like our soul, imagine your soul kind of being a ball of light inside of a mason jar that's like jammed in the middle of your chest behind your heart, right? Well, there are certain people who have the ability to kind of shine. Remember they had the movie The Shining, and they were talking about in the movie The Shining, people, their light shines so bright that other entities either came to see them or feed off of them, right? Hollywood really tells you the truth. They just disguise it as entertainment. Well, some people naturally have the ability to kind of shine. Other people get that ability through magic, and then other people get that ability through near-death experiences, right? So, again, let's imagine a three-lane highway for the audience. Left lane, natural ability. Middle lane, magic. Far right lane, near-death experience, right? When you in the middle lane and you practice magic, what you're doing is you're kind of shining. You're not a flashlight. An amateur person who practices magic is kind of like taking a big lighter in a dark room and flicking it and holding it, right? It generates a little bit of light. Eventually, it gets hot and it burns your finger. A person who really knows how to practice magic, I mean, real magic practitioners, and they'll tell you this, they're not like a big lighter. They're like a spotlight, you know what I'm saying, in a dark space. But they know how to protect themselves from the various entities that are attracted to that light, whether it be demonic, whether it be cryptid, whether it be, you know, aliens. They know how to protect themselves. So in some magic rituals that people have performed, which I'm not going to specifically talk about those rituals because I don't want to encourage anybody to do this. A part of that ritual is a cleanse where you must cleanse yourself. And that's like fasting, no sex, no nothing. And the reason why you want to do that is because you're purifying yourself. And then you, after you get through doing that purification, you start doing your work, which is what they call it, a work. Well, in some of those works, various different entities can sense that you're doing that work and they come pay you a visit and they come see you. In cases of some of the most powerful magic practitioners I've spoken to, in voodoo and hoodoo and voodoon, they all have talked to me about down here in New Orleans, the Rougarou coming to visit them while they were doing their rituals. And for the most part, that's what it's called in the South, where people really practice it, the Rougarou coming and pay a visit. It's not an aggressive, ooh, I'm going to get you visit. Just come and say, what the hell are you doing, right? So that's focused on the middle lane. Now, for people who've had near-death experiences, meaning, you know, they were in a coma and they were dead for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Some people who've been in comas for months, when they come out of that near-death experience, they come back with abilities that kind of force them to shine, and they're not used to what they're doing. It's like you come back with a new power, but you're not aware that you have this power. Entities love to come visit them. The very first guy I told you guys about, Blue, who's the one who caught everything on film, when he and I first started talking, I'm going through all the scenarios. Okay, well, why is this thing showing itself to you? Do you practice magic? What's your religious belief? What's your background? Did your family members do any magic? Did your family, oh, you got anybody from Haiti? Because I questioned my witnesses methodically, right? And I'm checking off boxes. Nope, 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 nope. And I was like, oh, crap. Have you died recently? Which is, it seems crazy to ask someone, have you died recently, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to know the question to ask. So I said, have you died recently? He says, yeah, I did. I'm like, okay, go into that. So he goes into him going to this clinic. And this is years ago. This is like 3 years ago. Yeah, 2.5, 3 years ago. Goes into this clinic to get a checkup. The doctor is telling him there's this experimental vaccine they want him to take. He says no. The doctor says, well, you're going to need to take it. They literally forced this young man to take this vaccine. He goes home, he gets sick, and pretty much freaking dies, like literally dies. Now, I can't tell you how long he was dead, but he went through the process of describing to me what he saw when he was dead. He was like, man, you know, everything just got dark, and then I was in this tunnel of light, and Jesus was at the end of this tunnel, and as I'm walking through this tunnel towards Jesus, and I'm like, well, what does Jesus look like? He was like, well, don't really look like a man. It was like, he's like, I just know it's Jesus. It's a man, but he's bright, and his face is bright, and his hands are bright. I just knew it was Jesus. And he says, as I'm walking through the tunnel, these entities, these things are on the right-hand side and on the left-hand side of the tunnel in the darkness, and it's reaching out for me. And he described Bigfoot, dogmen, gray aliens, spiders that were, that had like diamond purple eyes with arms and legs. And so he describes all these things that were trying to prevent him from getting to Jesus. And then he said, I want to go back. Please send me back. Cause he didn't want to walk through all of this stuff to get to where he needed to get to. And as he's talking about wanting to go back, he drops back into darkness. And he says, man, I fell into like darkness and then I splashed into this water. And when I stood up, there was this serpent with this green eyeball and it was just talking. It was like accusing me, like, you know, and it accused him of things like, you're not supposed to be gay. You're gay. You know, you weren't made gay. Why did you make that decision? Blah, 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 blah. And these are all things from this guy's life. Right. And then so finally he was like, I said, I wanted to go back. And then he woke up. But when he woke up, his body was freezing cold. You know, he was like, man, I couldn't move. He's like, my fingers were numb. My toes were numb. He's like, dude, I was dead. And he was sick for a couple of days after that, went to the hospital, and everything went back to normal. But after that is when he started seeing not only Dog Man, not only what looked like a freaking Bigfoot, he sent me a picture of, because it was huge. There was this giant black shadow that would be in his house that none of his friends wanted to come to his house, because if they did anything wrong, like if they went to the kitchen to get something out of the refrigerator without asking him, this shadow would like appear and hiss at them. And I talked to all his friends and like, they were like, nah, we ain't messing with him because he got all kind of crazy stuff going on at his house. So those near-death experiencers, they end up as well becoming a beacon of light in the darkness because they've been to the other side, they crossed the veil. And those entities have seen them. And then they know that they were sent back. And life is a precious gift, which we don't really take it for granted. Like this experience on this planet is precious. This experience to kind of become a better human being, to affect other people's lives, to shift the course of another human being's life is very, very precious, but we take it for granted. Mm-hmm. And so those entities want to experience that. They like to observe that. And I think that's what's going on. Let's jump all the way back to the left lane, which is just the person who's has a bright light, like just that person. They don't do the magic. They don't mess around. They haven't had any NDE experiences. Those people who are just going about their business, but they actually have this power and this ability, they don't know about it. Some of them kind of rise to be leaders in life. They take prominent positions, but they really don't understand how come the world kind of bends to their will. It's not about them being psychic. It's not about them being like, the special thing about them is that they just, their soul, that mason jar I described, it's just overflowing. It's because they were built that way. They're strong like that. Most times they don't even realize it until they're 70, 80 years old, but their whole life is wasted away. They didn't realize the power and the strength they have. Those people get visits from entities. Sometimes it's Dog Man, sometimes it's Bigfoot, but it typically starts as a kid. Like as a child, they start seeing things. Just yesterday, one of my show hosts did an interview with a guy whose daughter had been seeing Dog Man through her window. Like, they have the hurricane windows. You know how you have the slats where you have your regular window, then you have those slats that you pull down, the metal slats to keep, you know, the winds out? Well, the daughter would leave the window open but turn the slats. And so she would hear, like, breathing and grunting outside the window on the second story of the house, go over and look out the window. And she's face to face with this thing that she described as a man dog with pointed ears like a knife, bright yellow eyes with a black pupil, a long snout, a wet nose, and very sharp teeth, right? And this guy, his daughter never listened to any kind of content about Dog Man or werewolves or anything. But as she's describing it to him, he knows exactly what she's talking about because he's seen it and his brother's seen it. And they've all seen this entity, this creature around the area. But it comes to their house and goes to their daughter's window, right? And that I believe, and I could be wrong, I don't know everything, but I believe that happens to certain children because those children have that brightness inside of them. Mm-hmm. And that's an indicator of that. And if the parent knows what to do, they can protect their child. Now, the one significant thing I'll share with you guys that nobody really talks about because they're fascinated with the idea of this creature existing, they don't even get past the, you know, is it real or is it not real, right? But once you get past whether it's real or not, and start with what I said at the beginning of this interview, which is assume that it's real, period, until you can believe for yourself. The most interesting thing is there have been a number of my witnesses who've seen this and rebuked it in the name of Jesus Christ, and it would turn and walk away, and in some cases turn and run away, which I thought that was very, very interesting, mainly because my belief is that everything in life is spiritual warfare, and that everything has either a soul or it's a vessel for something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's significant that it can be repelled on a spiritual level. Now, I'm not telling anybody to go load up the truck with shotguns and go out into the woods and try and rebuke a dog, man, or Bigfoot. I think that's stupid. Leave them where they are. But it's just a weapon for your arsenal if you find yourself in a situation and you can't do anything else, pray, because it's definitely been working.
That's interesting. And, you know, we hear some accounts of people doing the same thing with some Bigfoot encounters as well as alien encounters, you know, rebuked in the name of Jesus or abduction stopped in the name of Jesus. And so there's definitely power in those words and obviously, you know, exercising your faith to find that protection. And that's just really interesting that there's an attractant with how you describe that. And I can definitely see that. And it makes sense. And it's something I've never considered, to be honest, is these people are being attracted almost in a spiritual level with their, what you call their intent, you know, with their light. Pretty fascinating stuff there. Now, are you constantly getting new encounters sent to you? I mean, is this something that are we seeing like an influx in encounters, or are we seeing people more accepting of what's going on and then they're reporting those encounters, or is it something else altogether?
Well, it's a couple things going on. So for the sake of the audience, let me just rewind a little bit and go back to the beginning to explain a few things. So the way I receive my encounters from people is not via email. You have to talk to me. Like, so someone may email me, oh, Dark Waters, I want to talk to you about my dog man encounter. I'll give them a phone number, which is on my website, they call, right? And most of the time, there's a long wait. And I leave a long wait intentionally because if you really want to talk to me about an encounter, you're going to reach out to me more than once. That's kind of how I filter out the people who just want to tell me some fantastic story because they're a codependent narcissist who needs attention, right? So I filter those people out. Finally, once we're on the phone talking, I will go through their story with them, and then I will loop them on their story. So I'll interject things into the story. I will stop them and pause them and freeze them and try and throw them off the track of what they said. I will change the cell. I will do all kind of mental gymnastics to try and get that person to lie or forget what they just said in the moment. Then we'll get off the phone. I'll call them back the next day and do the same thing. And then I'll do that over and over and over. If it's a very, very long, detailed encounter, I may talk to that person for a year before I even repeat their story. If it's like a short, like real short encounter, like, oh, I saw it out my window, or me and my wife were laying in the bed and I saw it, it may take a couple of days before I can really vet that person and see if they're telling the truth. But some of the very long encounters that I have, I talk to those people for years, okay? Then, so specifically, right now, my voicemail has, I think the maximum it holds is 50 messages. It has 50 messages from people who want to talk to me. And I just take my time going through them one by one. Now, to specifically answer your question about those encounters, wait, I forgot what was the question. Repeat the question one more time.
Yeah, so like are we seeing, is there a legitimate increase in these encounters?
Increase, right.
Yeah.
My bad, I'm sorry, I got you.
No, you're fine.
Legitimate increase. That's kind of like a 50-50 thing. There's a legitimate increase in calls about it, but just because there's a legitimate increase in people calling about it doesn't mean there's a legitimate increase in the actual encounters, if you kind of get what
right.
I'm saying.
Okay.
So there's more interest is the way to answer it, but it's still the same the same, pretty much the same amount of people who are telling the truth. There's a small fraction of people who really tell the true encounter. And you know it based on a description of the animal. You know it based on how they behave. You know it based on how that person retells their story. Like, people literally break down crying when they've had a real dog man encounter. And you force them to relive it. Like, they go to tears. They relive that moment and they're frightened again. So there's an increase in calls on it, yes. But I think that's part of that is due to the fact that it's become a popular topic. It's almost overtaking Bigfoot as kind of like the alpha cryptid that everybody wants to talk about. So there's an increase in that. But genuine real encounters, I think it's, from my experience, it's all the same. The one thing there has been an increase in is the demonic stuff. And I mean, just across the board, demonic stuff. But we're not going to talk about that. That's going crazy. We can talk about that another day. Mm-hmm. Stuff that I'm getting from people is insane. But when we're talking about dog man, there's increased interest, and that interest kind of, what's the best way to say it? It kind of pulls at certain personality types, codependent, I need attention personality types that want the attention of saying they had a dog man encounter. And so they really will make up some fantastical stories. And they will share those stories, and they will lie and keep lying and keep lying and keep lying until someone catches them. And that's the key to getting the true stories, is having the patience to sit there and just let somebody lie to you.
Right.
And not let them know that you know they're lying. And then eventually, in a polite way, say to them, well, you know, I heard you said this happened on a Tuesday at 7 p.m. Then you told me it happened on a Saturday at 7 a.m., bro, I'm not sure you got your story straight. And then go on about your business and go to the next person.
Interesting. You know, and that's unfortunate. I'm kind of, my biggest interest is probably more into like Bigfoot, Sasquatch. And I definitely am like, there's probably a lot of people out there that are, that are not telling the truth, and they're just making stuff up. And you got to kind of take things with a grain of salt, but doesn't mean you dismiss the creature whole cloth, and you just, you know, there's obviously legitimate encounters. There's obviously legitimate encounters with these dog men. And, we're kind of running a little bit up against a wall here on time. And so I thought, before we circle back and close things up here, can you share maybe a more frightening encounter, or an encounter that you feel like is probably the most prevalent in your mind?
No, I'll share my dog man encounter. Earlier when I started this back in 2015, going into 16, I didn't even think that it was possible that it existed. And I ended up going to Taylor, Mississippi with a friend of a friend. And through a series of unfortunate events, we end up on the side of the road on Old Taylor Road in Taylor, Mississippi. And this guy is telling me, he's like, yo, I'm telling you, man, these things are real. I saw them. And I'm just naive is the word, you know, pure naivete. I mean, I just naive. Like, I kind of felt like it could be real, but I wanted to see. And this is why I'm such a staunch, like, proponent of not going looking for these things, because you just do dumb stuff. And we're on the side of the road. The sun is going down. Crows get the squawking and doing their thing, which is all, when you hear crows talking to each other, you know there's something going down because they see something. And next thing you know, we hear freaking, like, it. To me, it sounds like, you know, a football team running through the woods directly at you. But it's not like ducking under limbs and branches. It's like intentionally running through stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you're naturally running through the woods, you're going to slide and duck. You're not going to hear crack, crack, boom, crack, crack, boom. Like, it sounds like something's just intentionally running, making noise. And his exact words is, okay, they're coming. We need to get to the truck. And so he starts walking to the truck. I start walking to the truck. Now the sun is pretty much gone down behind the trees and it's getting dark. And he's in the truck on the driver's side, like halfway in, halfway out. I'm on the passenger side with one leg in. I don't even have one leg in. I got the door up against my butt. But I'm not in the truck. Like, if the truck pulled off with one leg in, I could just hold on and pull off. I'm just like with the door resting against my butt, trying to look over the back to see what we could see. And he gets scared, dude, and he pulls off. Like, my man pulled off and left me right there. And I still got the mark on me from that door from where the door hit me, and pulled off, left me on the side of the road, took off going 80, 90 miles an hour, getting the hell away. And so I find myself there, sun pretty much going down. It's dark enough to where it's scary, a little bit of light to where I can see, and everything goes quiet. Like, I mean, everything, just complete silence. And I've never experienced anything like that where, I mean, like I'm inside of a bubble of silence. And but I could feel that there's something there on the other side of that road in those trees looking at me. But the harder I look, I just don't see anything. Like I can feel it. Mm-hmm. I heard it running in. It was clear that it was more than one thing running at us. But imagine something speeding up to you, slamming on its brakes, stopping, and then not making a sound. And then you're standing out there on your own. And, man, I wanted to cry. I wanted to pee on myself. I wanted to turn around and run. But I was like, okay, you're not going to be able to run. You're too fat to run. You ain't out running nothing. So I'm standing there, and the only thing I do is ball my fist, and I'm saying to myself, okay, you know, and this is before I understood the spiritual side of anything. I'm talking about just naive, greenhorn out here in these streets wilding, doing stupid stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, whatever this is, I'm going to fight it. I'm just going to fight it. And as I'm kind of settling into my mind, you know, the fight or flight, going through the fight or flight series of what are you going to do, as I'm making up my decision, okay, I'm going to fight whatever this is. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, I'm going to fight it. You can hear him hitting the brakes on that truck. And you know how when somebody, like, imagine a car accident. We've all heard a car accident, the seconds that lead up to a car accident, where it's like the car goes, well, that's what I hear. And I know he's stopping. And then I hear his engine just rev going. You could tell, like, his foot was on the pedal to the ground, like, and he held it. Because you hear it, you can hear the engine going through the cycle of vroom, 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 like he's coming. And as he's coming back around a little curve that we that was to the right of us, his lights are now shining onto the wood line. And right before he gets up to me, because you got to realize he's coming back towards me, so his driver's side door is now on my side. Right before he gets to me, the tree line lights up across from me, and I see this gigantic black mass, and I was at like 10 and a half feet in the air, move from one tree to the next. Like, it saw the light coming, and it was darting behind to get to another tree. And he literally pulls up right in front of me where his face is right in front of me. He's like, get in the truck, get in the truck. But I'm too afraid to, like, run around and get in the passenger side. So I spend, like, the next 30 seconds trying to hit the back tire and climb into the bed of the truck. So I jump on the tire, try to get my leg up. I can't get my leg up. And he's trying to pull off. Finally, I flip my whole body into the truck, and I land, and he pulls off, right? We get about 4 or 5 miles up the road. He pulls over, and he and I have this shouting match, like, in the words I can't use on your podcast, because we go at it. Because I'm like, you left me, dog. Right. And he's like, I didn't mean to. I thought you was in the truck. And, like, I'm ready to fight this man. But then he starts crying. And he's like, man, I was afraid. You know, you knew it was coming, you know, and I realized that, no, this was a man that was in a grips of fear. And now I understand why he was in a grips of fear, because all I saw was that mass move, and it confirmed that whatever the hell ran down on us was there, but I could feel it. And to describe feeling, you know how it's beyond the sense of that creepy somebody's watching me. It was like the atoms inside of my body, at a cellular level, my body was telling me, man, you are in danger. Like, you know, like prick, like my blood was prickling. Like everything inside of me was like, yo, you in danger. It's hard to describe. It was like my body itself, like the core of my body, the organs, the muscles, the blood, the veins, everything was saying, yo, you are in danger. You need to do something. And it was all, everything was working in one accord. Like, my whole body was functioning on, focused on that one thing. It was kind of peaceful, but scary at the same time, because I never felt anything like that. Even as an athlete, you know, when you're running down a football or trying to tackle somebody, you feel something similar because you're totally focused on one thing. But this was different. It was electric. And anybody who's ever witnessed anything frightening, you understand what I mean. It's like electricity surged through my body, but then it was tingling and prickling, and it was just crazy. But that's my dog man encounter. And that's why I tell people, don't go out there looking for dog man. I do these stories, I call it, you know, going full retard looking for dog man. And people say, well, I can't believe you do that. I'm like, no, I was the first one that did it. So I have the right to talk about people who do stupid stuff because I was the first one to do it.
You gotta warn everyone else. Oh man, I can't believe that's really, really scary. I can't imagine. You know, and that's one thing is people, you can think about it and you can, well, why didn't he do this? And why didn't you do that? And didn't you have a gun? And this, you know, you can have all those thoughts after the fact, but unless it happens to you, you really don't really understand how terrifying an event like that can be. That's something else. And how long?
Let me say this. The only people I know that have the ability to function in that level of fear are people who've been in combat, like active combat. Those are the only people I've spoken to who really have the ability to function under that level of stress, because that's what it was. It was body stress, mental stress, emotional stress. I know it because I felt like I was going to pee on myself, dude. I ain't had to pee. That's how bad it was. But the only people I've spoken to who have the ability to function in that manner under those, in those circumstances, are guys who really, really, you know, been to war. And I ain't talking about the guy who was like loading, you know, at the base, loading the ammunition on a truck to carry to the front line. I'm talking about the guys that was going door to door, kicking in doors and taking lives. Those are the guys that I've spoken to that they describe the exact feeling. And that's how I know they're not lying, because they describe the exact feeling, the electric tingling, the cellular level, but they have the ability to keep functioning. And God bless them, because I don't ever want to be one of them. I'm some bad mamma jammas. But if you're one of those guys, you know what I'm talking about.
Wow. Yeah. I think James, do you have some?
Go ahead and wrap up, but I have a question I want him to take off the recording.
Okay. All right. So yeah, it looks like we're wrapping up here, and we really, really appreciate you coming on. We know that your time is valuable, and we appreciate you coming on to share these encounters. Your encounter specifically, I think it's important for people, especially if these things, if people are interested in these things. You know, we talked about Tony from the confessionals and how he just wants to go out and look for all these kind of things. Something that you probably don't want to do all the time. I think it's important to take someone else's encounter, their experience, and, you know, that's enough. And if you do have any encounter, you know, just be careful, be wary, and keep your wits about you, and be prepared for anything. And, you know, we wanted to give you, Dark Waters, a couple minutes. If you wanted to wrap up and talk about your YouTube channel, anything from your website, and just have an opportunity to plug that information.
Sure. I have a members only website. It's imdarkwaters.com. That has my full complete body of work, things that are not on YouTube. But if you want to just jump in the waters and swim, go to YouTube and look up Dark Waters. And there's plenty of fantastic content. Everything that I put on my website or on YouTube is vetted by me, and I believe it to be true. I have not been proven wrong once. Well, actually I have. There was one guy that lied, and he lied about Slender Man, and he did it maliciously. So there's been one time that one person lied, and it came out that he lied to me because he was doing it maliciously. But outside of that, everybody else has been on point. They've been vetted on point. And I made a mistake with that Slender Man guy because I took him through somebody else. But outside of that, one. So we're talking about 500 videos on YouTube, probably about 2,000 stories altogether. And there's been one person, that one lie that got passed. And deep down inside, I guess I kind of felt bad about that one in the beginning. I shouldn't have did it. I should have trusted my instincts, but one. So if you want true paranormal content from a person that's going to tell you the truth, then go to imdarkwaters.com or look at my YouTube channel, which is Dark Waters. And if you want to see footage of Dogman himself, look up Elusive Dogman Caught on Video. It's going to be a 30-minute video with Blue, where you see his emotions from seeing the cryptid all the way through to the end, everything that he goes through. And it's important that you watch the entire 30 minutes, because now you can tell what I mean about a witness experiencing something and the range of emotions that they go through. And that way you'll know from now on when you're listening to stuff if the person's telling the truth or not. That's why I left the whole 30 minutes of him talking there, kind of as a lesson in the real deal paranormal encounters.
Right. Well, that is awesome. And again, for the listeners, check out his content, find his YouTube stuff, and start diving deep. It's something that I believe is, I mean, there's enough encounters that I've heard that I believe that this thing is legitimate. And even if I haven't had my own encounter, it's something that is out there. And again, we can't thank you for coming onto the show, and we hope you have a good afternoon.
Sounds good. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Lost River Legends. If you enjoyed this episode and you would like to help support the podcast, please share it with others and consider subscribing. Here at Lost River Legends, our primary focus is delivering unique topics, amazing guests, all paired with top-notch production value. The Earth we live on has many hidden secrets, countless paranormal stories, and is filled with amazing, curious humans who are trying to find answers to life's questions. Here at Lost River Legends, we are no different. We believe an active curiosity to the unknown is ingrained in the human experience. We hope you'll join us on our journey to explore the lost legends of the Earth by listening to past and future episodes. Until then, James and I wish you health, happiness, and a curious mind. And remember, the clock of life is ticking away. Don't waste another moment and live your best life.